Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
So today we are joined by David and Carla, who come from USA. Quite an interesting topic we're going to talk about, which is reincarnation and past lives, which is something we've not really talked about on the podcast before. So I'm looking forward just to getting into it and learning more ourselves. So welcome, Dave and Carla.
Thanks.
It's great to meet you guys.
You too.
Glad to see that there are people over on the other side of the ocean still.
Just about. You wouldn't think it with everything that's happened over the last 12 months. It's been a crazy time.
True.
So do you want to give us a bit of a background on yourselves and where you came from, basically?
Good, Dave. You go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm a physician. I have known Carla for 20-plus years. I bought the practice where she was the office manager some 25 years ago. We've really been best friends ever since. Back at 6-7 years ago, we started electronic medical records in the United States, and it was horrible. I had done paper and pen most of my life or dictated notes. Suddenly I'm on a computer 12-14 hours a day, trying to get used to this, trying to see patients, trying to be able to continue to do this. And Carla tells me that I became, let's say, grouchy.
Crabby.
Okay. And it was really difficult to work with. I was getting up even earlier in the morning, starting notes at 5 a.m., sometimes not getting them done till 8 o'clock at night. It was terrible. And she came up one day and she said, "We've got to do something for you, because you're no fun to work with anymore." And she says, "The patients are going to notice. Everybody else in the office is noticing." And so Carla gave me some ultimatums and some choices. What did you do, Carla?
Well, I had said to him, well, oddly enough, I don't know if you have AARP in the UK, but here it's, for the lack of a better word, I'll say it's an old people's magazine. And so I had it, and I was reading it one morning, and it was talking about the benefits of meditation, which I found hysterical, because for AARP to be so open-minded, you know, it caught my attention. And so it listed all these reasons you should meditate. And I thought, well, you know, that would be great for us to do, because we're also stressed in the office. Maybe I will talk to Dave about that. So I went in and I said, "Dave, you know, Dave, normally I like to say he's a cross between Yogi Bear and Fred Flintstone." And he was just so crabby and short and you couldn't reach him. And I said, "Okay, either I'm going to call a counselor or we can try meditation as an office. What do you want to do?" And of course, you know, he did what everybody would say. Well, let's try meditation, because he really didn't want to go and talk to a counselor. And so as an office, you know, we work in a small medical office, and there were two other girls that work there. We decided that we would do it in the morning before the patients began. So the first day, all four of us got there like at 7:30, and we were in the break room, which was dimly lit. We had a candle going and some peaceful like spa music. And afterwards, we all commented that it was really difficult to turn our minds off. You know, your mind just goes a mile a minute. So that was our first conversation. The second day, we all saw colors. All of us saw different colors. So we talked about that and wondered if that was normal. And then the third day, the girl said, "We don't want to come in early. We'll do it at home." So Dave and I decided, well, we're going to do it anyway, because he continued to be a crab and electronic medical records were not going away anytime soon. And so we did. And then we heard the patients coming in, and we got up and we started to go about the day. And Dave came up behind me and he said, "Carla, I know you're going to think this is really strange, but while I was meditating, I think I was talking to your mother." Now, my mother had died 20 years before that. Dave never met her. And I thought that was odd, but I'm open-minded enough. My first thought was, well, why the heck is she going to you and not me if you're talking to my mother? So I said, well, why do you think it was my mother? And he said, well, I know you'll think this is odd, but, you know, from side view, you guys have the same eyelashes. You look the same. And that wouldn't have caught my attention had my mother and I not had a conversation about our eyelashes once and how you couldn't even see them without mascara. So he had my attention. Then he said, she kept showing me a shoe and she would laugh. So, by the way, my mother's family was all from England. And we do have, Dave and I have three or four past lives in England. So just FYI. Anyway, so he said she kept showing me a shoe. And I went over to the computer and I Googled shoes and all these different types came up. And I said to Dave, there was probably 60, 70 pair of shoes. He came over. I said, which one was it? And he pointed to an open-toed, small-heeled pump that my mother always wore when she ballroom danced and to church or for dress up. And my sister also worked in the office with us at the time. And we just looked at each other like, how could you possibly have gotten that out of all of those? So then my sister pulled out a picture of my mother and Dave just looked at it and he shook his head. He was very emotional at that point. And he said, that's who I was talking to. Now, mind you, we are just normal, ordinary people working through life. And Dave had no idea that he could connect this way with the spirit world. So we decided that we were going to continue to meditate. Of course, we wanted to meditate that second all day long and never stop now that we knew that this was possible. So first we met my mother. And then the next day, as we were meditating, Dave met his spirit guide. And her name is Isabella. And she told him that she had been with him for the little over 6,000 years that he had been born from our first incarnation was over 6,000 years ago, and that she was with him through thick and thin and always there. So our first book is called The Gift of Past Lives with Mother, Isabella, God, and Elizabeth. In that order for a reason, he met my mother, then he met Isabella. Then there came a day when we were journaling everything that we heard through meditation, everything Dave saw. None of it made sense, but there came a day when I said to Dave, well, who is God? And Dave, what happened?
There was an answer. I was sitting there and it said, I am. And I thought, what? And then it felt warm, beautiful, comforting, loving. It was overwhelming. I started to cry right there in the office. And I knew that something reached me. And then shortly after that, we met Elizabeth, which was Carla's spirit guide. And we kept meditating this whole idea of different lives that Isabella was telling us about didn't quite come through yet. But one day I was meditating and I said, Carla, this is a memory. Oh, I was seeing flashes of pictures and different things. And one was something that reminded Carla of Boston. And I said, oh, I was in Boston once. And Carla said, when were you in Boston? Carla grew up in Boston. And I was from the Midwest, Nebraska. And I said, well, I have this memory right now where I'm running on a beach in Boston because my father went to graduate school. And in Boston, I was running on a beach, screaming and yelling. And suddenly this little girl jumped up, yelled, stop, be quiet, you're bothering my family. And she pushed me down and she gave me a kiss on the forehead. And I said, I'm looking up at her and she's got her hands on her hips. And she had this little two-piece blue ruffled bathing suit. And Carla looked at me and said, Dave, it was me. It was 38 years before that till we met again.
And I didn't need any reminder. I remembered that because, you know, we were raised the good Catholic family. I was the youngest of six girls. My parents were always splitting up. And that particular day, we weren't well off. We didn't have a car or anything. But my father had rented two cabs and took us all to Revere Beach. So that day when Dave started to talk about Revere Beach, Revere Beach is not just sand and water. It's an amusement park. And as he described it, my sister and I said, well, that has to be Revere Beach. And then as he kept talking, I knew that day because I never got brand new clothes. I always inherited all of my five sisters. So that day we got there, everybody had a bathing suit except me. So we went across the street, all seven of us, and I got my first brand new two-piece blue ruffled bathing suit. So it was etched in my mind forever. And Dave talking about it, we just couldn't believe it. But we still kept meditating, and Dave continued to get pictures and colors and faces, and we just wrote everything down, still not knowing what anything was, until one day Dave came into the office and said he had had a memory the night before of us in Chicago in 1925.
Now that started us wondering, because we thought it's interesting enough that, you know, as children, we had a memory and we had met each other, and then we met each other 38 years later, and then 20 years later, we're having this experience. But it was really interesting. I'm standing in an alley. I just get shot. I see lights flashing, and I see Carla standing across the alley. And I say, Carla, it looks like Carla, not exactly, but I could still tell from her steel blue eyes that it was Carla. And she was dressed with this fringed dress like a flapper. The next day while meditating, I found out that I met the flapper Ruby Donaldson at a wedding of a man named Angelo. She was a flapper in his bar. She was singing at his wedding. And her parents' name were Donald and
James and Anna Donaldson.
Oh, James. Yes, James and Anna Donaldson. And they were from Bullock, Georgia. And she told me she moved to Chicago to get her dreams and learn to be a dressmaker. All sorts of interesting facts. And Carla's one of the most curious women. She's asked more questions than anybody could ever ask. A day she was off work, she started doing research.
I actually got onto Ancestry.com, and I found a Ruby Donaldson, born to James and Anna Donaldson in 1904. And had we not known their names, Isabel had given Dave those names, plus that I had 11 brothers and sisters, and those all popped up. I could bring up pictures of my parents and some of the brothers and sisters, but not of myself, Ruby, at that time. And then I found a couple of articles on a gangster named Angelo Jenna. Now, I never heard of him, but I found out through reading that he was the head mobster in Little Italy in Chicago right before Al Capone. And I forget, it was like, they were called like the Terrible Jenna Brothers. There were six of them. And now, I'm not into mobsters, and so I wasn't familiar with it. But as I read, I found out that he had married Lucille Spinola on January the 10th, 1925. That was in the article. And there was also a picture of their wedding cake, because it's sort of over 10 feet tall, and it was serving over 3,000 mobsters. They were married at Ashland Auditorium in Chicago. So, again, we could corroborate that. And Ruby had worked for Angelo. He owned Ruby, basically. And after I met JJ, that's Dave, his name was Jonathan Jr., after I met him at the wedding, then other things transpired that we hadn't received the information on. So we kept meditating, and we would get little bits and pieces of it. So Dave, I'll let you take the rest.
So we kept meditating, and actually we were so curious, and I'm a physician, so I was still not sure I even believed everything that was occurring. But we actually drove to Chicago, went to Chicago's Little Italy, walked down the street like I remembered, turned a corner. I'm asking Isabella, are we getting close? And we actually found the apartment building that Ruby Donaldson lived in 1925. A friend of ours did some research in Chicago and found that the building had been built in 1899 and had been an apartment building ever since. So we started doing even more research, and we found out there was all this research out there on children with spontaneous memories of past lives. The books written by Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker both at the University of Virginia, have been looking at children's past life memories. It seems that some children can remember up to four or five some of their past lives. And they've actually documented some 2,500 cases of children who remember past lives where they've been able to go and verify much of the details. They actually show the children pictures of the house that they supposedly lived in their last life. And what they do is they put like six pictures out and they say, do any of these houses look familiar? And the child always picks the life that person lived in the last life. And so they get a lot of verified details, and they've been doing that research for some 40 or 50 years. We also started researching and found that 33% of the world's population believes in reincarnation. We found that some 25% of all Christians believe in reincarnation. Now, these are things that people don't talk about. We did some research on church history and actually found that reincarnation was a normal teaching back at the time of about Jesus, and that Origen of Alexandria, Egypt, who is actually the person who wrote most of the early church doctrine, he actually wrote that reincarnation and transmigration of the soul was the normal. However, 200 or 300 years later, he was excommunicated from the church and all of his writings were written out because reincarnation wasn't what the church was teaching. Then we kept meditating, and we've soon found that we had multiple lives together, and we found Carla in 29 of my past lives. Carla's had 34 past lives, and I've had 42 over the last 6,000 years. We started to do more reading. We found out that we actually return in groups called soul groups, soul family, or karmic mates. And we find that we frequently return in different lives, in different roles. We found that we've been rich and poor. We've been kings and queens. We've been black and white. We've actually
saints
been Oriental.
Saints and sinners.
Saints and sinners. Mm-hmm. We've had Christian, Muslim lives, Jewish lives, pagan lives. We found some lives that we thought were wonderful and beautiful. And we also found some lives that were really not so beautiful, some that I would call horrific. And Isabella all along kept giving us lessons. We started writing down all these lives that we could find. And that's really where we got to the book. We then went for past life regression training with Dr. Brian Weiss. For your listeners, Dr. Weiss is a psychiatrist. He was the head psychiatrist at Mount Sinai in Florida. He was the head of the Department of Psychiatry. He actually started a lot of past life regression. Now, there's some other people out there who are also early past life regression therapy. He was a psychiatrist, and he used regression therapy, and he would take people back to their childhood so they could find memories that maybe caused their psychological problems. And Dr. Weiss started to find that there were people that he'd take to their past, to their life as a child, and then he'd tell them, well, go back to your a little younger, or go back farther. And these people started going back to lives that occurred before this one. And he started taking people back farther and farther. And that's really where we started, because we had so many experiences and so many lessons. And because we had Isabella to ask questions to, she started telling us and explaining about karma. She started explaining about the five simple rules for living. And I'm going to let Carla tell a little bit about that.
Well, Isabella said that, you know, we all know what the Ten Commandments are, but she was going to condense it a little bit for us because it was easier for us to remember. So if we live a life that is without conceit, jealousy, selfishness, and unforgiveness, we will get off the wheel of karma. If we do everything out of love, then we cease to make karma. So if you think about that, and any bad habit, or we like to say negative habit, that you think you have, they'll all fall into one of those categories. You know, ego is under conceit. There's a lot of ways to be selfish. You can be selfish with your time. You can be selfish with your money. Unforgiveness, that's pretty self-explanatory. But one of the things that you have to remember is to forgive yourself. None of us are perfect. But when we wrote the first book, The Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth, we put in 20 of our past lives stories in there, 20 out of the 29. And then after each one, we gave the reason, what we did that was negative in each one of those lives that created karma to make us have to go to another life. And then in our second book, Hell No, Reincarnation, there's 7 more of our lives. And then our third book, The Manual, it's just what you think. It's how to live life, because I love to say, I never got the manual. That was my excuse. Yeah. But with the manual, it tells you exactly how to live life if you want to get off that karmic wheel. But that kind of laces through one of our lives. But I will say, and Dave and I agree on this, our favorite past life was in England. We lived in the Cotswold area. His name was Robert. My name was Sarah. And we actually prepared. We were one of those early groups of people that didn't like the taxation in England. So we decided that we were coming to America to live. But it's such a wonderful, loving story. We had such a peaceful, good life filled with love. But unfortunately, you know, it ends in tragedy, and with a lot of past life regression. Normally, trauma surfaces first because, you know, what do you remember in your life? You either remember something that was absolutely phenomenal or you remember something that was absolutely tragic. And it's the same thing with people remembering their past lives. So the first past life that Dave remembered was him being shot in an alley. And then from there, we got all the details of Ruby and JJ. And that is kind of like the big story that's in book one. And that book has a red ruby ring on the cover. It's stunning. It actually belongs to Ruby and JJ's great-great-great-granddaughter. She wears it on her hand, but she doesn't know that we're her great-great-great-grandparents. We hope someday that we will meet. But in the back of that book, there's a separate little vignette, a separate little story about the red ruby crystal, where that crystal was found originally and how it changed hands 34 times, only to end up being split up into 4 separate pieces. And Dave and I now own 2 of those pieces. Another piece is in a chalice that belongs to the Catholic Church, and the other piece is on that the hand of our great-great-great-granddaughter. So that's like a separate little story in there. That's so unbelievably awesome to have that type of history. So, Dave?
So we filled you up with a whole bunch of information. Questions you might have now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was incredible to listen to. I was just wondering, at what point did you realize or figure out that these visions and these pictures that you were seeing were actually your past lives?
Well, we found out relatively soon. I'll tell you a little bit more of the Ruby and JJ story, because I kept telling Carla more and more of the story that I was hearing. I finally came into the office one day and I said, you have to hear more of this story. And I sat there and I started to tell her the story as I'm remembering it. And I'm talking about a conversation I had with Ruby that was like so vivid. In the middle of the conversation, Carla started to answer as Ruby. Wow. I'm having the talk. I become almost like I am JJ and she is Ruby. And the conversation is repeated and she has the same memory.
It was the wildest thing. It was like I had no control over what was coming out of my mouth. And I just looked at him like, did I just say that? It's like, how do I know these things? But that happened as other lives were discovered. We would get bits and pieces, not just Dave. Dave can contact the spiritual world, you know, in his spirit guide like that and other people. It's harder for me to meditate and shut down my brain, but I do get visions of past lives. I get pictures. They're vivid enough that I can draw them. And I can hear my spirit guide, Elizabeth, not like he does, but we're all capable of hearing our spirit guide, even though I will say that it's more like feel. It's like all of a sudden you know something and you're like, where did I get that? How did I know that? But it's because they're talking in your left ear. I never knew this, but as a four-year-old, my parents were split, as I told you, and we didn't have any money. I actually slept in a bedroom with two of my sisters, and I was still in a crib at age four. And I remember one night I was a bedwetter. What the heck? Everything else is in my book. I might as well say that too, right? So I was a bedwetter, and I remember laying there and calling my sisters. I kept calling to them, and neither one of them would get up with me. And all of a sudden, I heard in my left ear, a woman say, Carla, go to sleep. Now, my mother didn't live with us. And my sisters were all young. So what woman was talking in my left ear? And I remember that like it was yesterday. And then when this all began, I had Dave ask Isabella one day, I remember this day. And she said, that was Elizabeth telling you to go to sleep. We're all capable.
So partially to answer that question, if it hadn't been Isabella explaining some of it, I don't know that we would have understood exactly what it was, except that each and every life memory, I could tell it was Carla. Now, I can tell you this, Carla's been my mother, my sister, certainly a wife,
neighbor.
A neighbor, a friend, in all of these lives. Now, there are times when she has dark hair and dark eyes, and I still look into the eyes in that memory, and it's still her. You can tell something in the eyes. Now, there's a lot of times when she has the same steel blue eyes that she has now. But you start to get to the point where the memories become so substantial. And some of the memories we've been able to substantiate part of the information so that we know they're real memories. Ruby and JJ was the easiest because it's close in time. Some of the old ones, I actually went to England, 4 or 5 years ago after the experience and felt that it was normal in the Cotswolds.
It is. Definitely,
you know,
yes.
And it was beautiful and comfortable there. I remember standing in Bristol, and suddenly I remembered the boat from Robert and Sarah, and I remembered standing on the boat, and remembering things. In Bristol, we were waiting, and they were telling us we had to wait because the water comes in and the dock fills up and then it goes back out and you have to get on a boat when the water is high. And I'm in Bristol having this memory. And then I go on a tour and the guy starts to tell me the story. Yeah, this was a great port at one time and people left to go to America and other places and the port was great. You know, the water has to fill in and the docks raise up and fill and then everybody gets prepared and you have to get out before the water leaves. And I'm like, they're telling me the story I already knew. You know, and I'm like, how is all that possible if it's not a real memory?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have a memory, you just know something for whatever reason. Dave, tell them about the chisel that you could hear when you were standing in the museum.
Okay, this was also on the trip to England. We finally landed. We had all this plane fatigue, and I was with my sister, niece, and brother-in-law. But we said, well, we're in England. We got to go see something right now. The tour doesn't really start till tomorrow, and we ran to the Museum of England. Museum of London. And I walked in and I'm walking around looking at things. And suddenly I was standing in an Egyptian whatever you want to call it, exhibit. And I'm staring at this bust of a great pharaoh, and suddenly I heard chink, 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 and I remembered carving the pharaoh that stood in front of me. Wow. And
luckily, we already knew about that life.
Yes, wow. That I knew that I had been a stone cutter in Memphis and had been recruited to the Valley of the Kings. However, seeing the bust itself brought the memory flooding in again.
So I have, sorry.
No, go right ahead.
So I have a question. Why do you think that you two have been linked through all the different past lives?
Well, like Dave said at the beginning, we have our soul families and we have our karmic mates. We like to call them family mates and karmic mates. You come back in the same group over and over because either you're comfortable with one another or because you have some karma to work out with somebody. I'll give you an example. My next door neighbor who recently moved, we have found him in 21 of our past lives. And there's, in every one of those lives, there's some way that he wronged us and maybe we didn't ignore it or, you know, we played into it. Like I said before, everybody's a saint and a sinner. We've all done horrible things and history has, you know, allowed us to do it, unfortunately. Just like, you know, we've done many podcasts and lots of times we find the podcast hosts in our past life. So I'm sure that we will find out that you guys are part of our soul group because Dave, what's the immediate soul group number?
Okay, so this is a little complicated and part of it's in book three.
The manual.
So we have an immediate group of 39 and then those people have 39 attached to them. So if you look at it, there is some 600 and some people in the next group, and then it gets up to about 4,000. So it exponentially grows. But if you think about some 4,000, some people that are closest to you continue to return with you, and you're always meant to reconnect. And in the world now, especially with Skype and all of these things, we can connect with people all over the world. And so we keep finding people in some sort of connection that we had in the past. Interesting points to consider is that in some of these things, I'll give you an example. When you go down and you see a store clerk in your local supermarket or grocery store, and if they're having a bad day and you respond negatively to them, just be aware you may now have tied yourself to them forever because they're going to return because you have karma to fix. Those are kind of an interesting things. Now I'm going to show you something that, especially in the UK area, is interesting. We have a Viking life and we landed on the Scottish shores. There was really nothing to pillage there because Scotland was poor. We ended up staying in Scotland. In the next life, we were English fighting the Scottish. In the next life, we were Scottish fighting the English. And in fact, that we found out that we were fighting over a series of lives, each other, the same people again and again. Because the reality is we have to live on both sides of every side to actually understand. So when you say you've been black and white, well, if you don't live both sides, you don't understand it.
If how do you learn compassion if you don't live both sides?
You know, and so you end up living both sides. We've been slaves and slave owners. If you haven't been in control of people, how do you know and you've done wrong? If you haven't lived the other side where they controlled you, and that might be in this day and age, it might be that you're not a very good boss. You know, or you might have a boss that's very overpowering and it feels like your job is horrible. Well, that's not much different than a past history where you were a slave.
Dave, can I give an example here?
Sure.
So Ruby's boss, Angelo Jenna, the mobster, I told you he owned me. He controlled me. I wasn't allowed to do anything. He controlled all the girls that worked for him. In this life, he was my first husband. I say first husband because in this life, I gave him the boot. In that life, he owned me. But see, we had karma to work out, and we did. So they're just little lessons, and a lot of people think, you know, we're on a lot of these reincarnation sites, and you see all schools of thought. But people think karma, they don't want to believe in karma because they think karma is a punishment. Karma is not. Karma is a blessing. It's a chance to undo what you did. So in my first marriage, I was able to do that. And the synchronicities are unbelievable. If you're paying attention to them, you can see. Now, as Dave and I went on this journey, and we started to learn these 29 past lives together, we found them in Bermuda. We were black servants there. We found them in the Mayan civilization close to Cancun. We found them in Italy. We found them in Scotland, England. And so here's a huge synchronicity. With my second husband, we were married in Bermuda. For some reason, I was drawn to go to Bermuda, and he also was in that life with us. We went to Italy, we went to Scotland, we went to England, and we also went to, of all the places that I could choose on vacation, because, you know, normally I did, of all the places that we could have gone to, and then on our 10th anniversary, we went to North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina. We actually have a life in Asheville, North Carolina, where I was actually poisoned and killed, I should say poisoned to death. But those little synchronicities pop up all the time. And if you pay attention to those, they're actually so cool and so interesting. One of our lives in Italy, we knew, this is one of the things that Dave and I have been able to figure out. We know our names, our astrological signs, what we died from, when we were born and died. And we know all of our children in each one of those lives, and we know who they are today if they're here with us. So one of our lives in Italy, there was one daughter that we were unable to figure out who she was today. And we hadn't met her. And when we asked Isabella who it was, she said, well, you just haven't met her. So we were doing a podcast one day, and it was a man and a woman. And before the show started, we were chit-chatting like we did with you guys today. And the girl said, well, I've had one past life regression. And she said, I found out that I lived in Italy and my name was Angela. And immediately I got a chill up my back because I knew that the daughter that we still, you know, we weren't sure who it was yet, her name was Angelia. Well, that's Angela, but in Italian. And I looked at her, and I couldn't believe it because it just clicked, and I waited till a little later in the show to tell her that. And she also had, like, the chill up her spine because, you know, you feel it. You know when you meet people, you either feel really close to them or for some reason there's something about them that you just don't feel right around them. Those are usually the ones that you've had some sort of karma with. And the ones that you feel comfortable with, they're probably part of your soul group, your family group.
And there's a big theory out there that part of deja vu is really past life memory or past life experience. You've been in a situation much like it before. And I'll try to explain a couple things real quick. The deja vu, so it's possible that you've been in that situation before and something bad happened in that situation, so it reminds you, or something good happened in that situation and it reminds you. If you do the study on the consciousness and subconscious mind, you find that the subconscious mind records every one of your experiences in your life as both either a positive or a negative experience. One of the examples is if you touch something, it's hot and it burns you. The next time you touch something hot, you pull back faster. Well, past life regression, hypnosis, and or meditation actually accesses the subconscious. And so those subconscious memories are sitting there and carried with us from another life. And so just like when you're burned, if you have something that was negative in a past life, example is if you were drowned, you might have a little bit of fear of water in this life. And so if you go next to the water and it feels like you're going to drown, you avoid the water and you don't drown this time. Same thing happens when you touch something that's hot. You try to avoid it the next time. So those things continue to follow us into this life, and it's a little bit protective even, so that you don't have the same problem, the same karma develop, so that you have a chance to learn and grow.
So you talk about the karma and that you have to sort of live both sides to understand. So do you feel that once you've resolved a particular conflict or some kind of resolution has happened between two people or two situations, that's part of your progression as through your next lives? And what
Correct.
would happen when you get to a point where there is no resolution, there is no conflict, you're just, everything's been done, as it were?
That's a great question. So because of our experiences, we believe reincarnation was God's plan from the beginning. Isabel has already told us there is no hell. Mm-hmm. So we are really a spark of God's love created. We're created perfect. We're placed into a world which is certainly not perfect. We need the ability to survive. So our ego is part of that. And as ego grows, you know, first you need this fight or flight thing to protect yourself so you don't disappear and die early. But this experience has to occur where we overcome that self-preservation. And so the ability to overcome self-preservation is to overcome selfishness, the ego, jealousy, conceit, and making decisions out of love. When that happens, you've actually completed all of the lives. Now, sometimes Carla and I joke and say, well, we must be slow learners because I've got 42 past lives. But the reality is we're all trying to grow back to that spark of perfect love so that we can return back to Creator Source, Tao, however you want to put that. And it matches a little bit of a almost a Hindu perspective, that they are growing a Buddhist perspective. They go through many lives until they reach nirvana or till they return back to their creator. It's the whole religious experience that's part of this. You are eternal. You have no reason to fear death. You have a choice in everything you do. You're created with the ability to choose with free will. Because without free will, you cannot choose to love. It can't be forced. You know, the thought that religion says you either do this or you're punished in hell is not really learning to love. It's loving because you're coerced. And so you really need the ability to have free will to truly love. And when you can learn to truly love, you're done and you return back to the afterlife, if you want to call it that, to heaven, to the spiritual world, back into God or into the total consciousness. Whatever your perspective is, that's where we're going back. And it's interesting, when you look at past life memories of children, if you look at people who have had near-death experiences, they all report some of the same experiences. They return back to the light. They talk to a being of higher spirit. Sometimes they talk to God. Some of them report Jesus. Some of them report Muhammad. Some of them report just their past family members that they meet again. They go through some sort of a past life review, which is what happens. And we've experienced some past life reviews during this. where they look at their life and they get ready for their next life and they have to see what they did wrong so that they have a chance to learn, grow, and return back to God as they were created.
So I want to ask, where do things like ghosts and spirits and, like, we've talked to a few mediums, so where do, sort of, like I said, where do ghosts and, I guess, afterlife sort of fit in with reincarnation? If you're being reincarnated, is there like a past, like a connection or a in between, maybe between lives, where you are like a spirit of your current or your most recent life? I think that's a question I'm trying to get out.
I think I understand the question. You're asking the question, how does all of this sort of play together? So, of course, there's a time between lives, and that time between lives is very variable. We've had times that were, 300 years and times that were 9 months. There still is that period of time in between. We believe everybody passes over. Most people who experience connections with a ghost or someone who's passed over are really experiencing from a human perspective what that experience is. So we experience this passed over soul, the connection that a medium has, or the connection that somebody who feels like they've experienced a ghost has. They see it as physical. They feel it as physical because that's the only way we can interpret it as a human, is through our experiences. That time between lives, some of those spirits, part of their time between lives or their atonement is actually to reach out to those on this earthly plane to try to explain or say they are sorry. And so some people do meet, and there are some mediums who are great at connecting your passed over loved one who really needs to tell you, it's okay, I'm sorry for doing this. I'm even sorry for dying and leaving you without your father or your spouse. That's part of their past life review and part of their atonement, is trying to reach out to people. Also, many times, people who die early in life, they didn't get to finish everything. So they're also reaching out from that spirit world, reaching out to people because they think they haven't finished something. And so that's part of that ghostly experience that some of us who are very open can feel. Many of those who do, the ghost hunting experience are really very open, and they're feeling or experiencing that life that used to be there that's trying to reach back because they have unfinished business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense.
And so, the other part of that is, if the time between life could be 60, 70, 80, hundreds of years, certainly during that time period, you're in that afterlife or heaven, the spirit world, whatever you want to name it. Most people also from NDEs and from then say that they're actually disappointed when they come back because they feel an all-encompassing love, warmth, the presence of a spiritual being of God. And being away from that is something no one would choose. So we end up coming back to this life because we haven't learned all the lessons, but we really want those lessons to end and return back.
So how many lives do you think people do go through until they reach that moment, or is this sort of kind of an unknown type thing at the moment?
It's really unknown. If we looked at our potential, because our first life is about 6,000 years ago, you would say it would be possible to have 80 to 100, and we know people who have 70, 80. So we think that that's a reasonable time frame that people could have many.
It depends on how long it takes you also to recycle back with your soul family. For example, if I have karma with you, Greg, and I die early and you live a long time, then I cannot come back again until you live out your life. You die, you do your atonement, you know, or a past life review, and then we come back together so that we can do it again. So there's that cycle you have to go through to get back with your family.
Yeah. So you get off cycle. It's possible that there'll be a life in between there, but so it might be two lives later that you run into the same people again.
Yeah. I early on in one of our very, very early lives, I murdered Dave. I have this thing with poison for some reason. Anyway, I poisoned him.
I'd still like her, by the way.
I actually sat in atonement or life review for 980 years because back then there were less people on the earth, if you can imagine. There were less people on the earth, so God could keep us in our life review for longer. Now that there's more people on earth, we come back quicker because we have people that we have either wronged or that we have to help. So it's happening a lot quicker.
So if God puts us down so we can go through all of this, to go back, why are we on this journey? Why are we not just at the start? We're in that ethereal bit with the love and everything. Why have we got to go through all this karma and resolution until we get back to the good place, as it were, again? Why is there the need for all of this?
Okay, so again, part of that is if you've never experienced an absence of love, you can't appreciate love. Does that make sense? So without this experience, you can't go back and say what I have is good. You've never had want or need. And so once you live through want or need, you can appreciate that there is no want or need. And so that, now, this is another thing that is, you'll hear in many reincarnations circles that we need experience. As a creation, we learn through experience how to communicate. So if you have pain, you know that the absence of pain is. If you know what love is, you know the absence of love, you can know what love is. As a being, a spiritual being, if I want to communicate with anybody else, I have to have experience so that there is some form of communication so that you can understand a reference point. Because there are no reference points if all you know is love. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. So another question I've got for you is, right at the start, you talked about everybody having a spirit guide.
Yes.
So I'm not aware of mine. How would I go about trying to feel, communicate, understand, acknowledge mine?
Okay.
How open are you? Are you meditating?
I don't meditate, no. I've tried. I've got a meditation app on my phone that tells me every day that I need to meditate.
So the first thing, Dave and I used to teach meta-meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult because not everybody has the gift like Dave. If you take the time, just like you would, to work out, to take a shower, to clean your house, to do your laundry, if you add meditation 20 minutes every single solitary day where you turn everything off, you have peaceful music. The Buddhists, a lot of people meditate in complete silence. People who have trouble shutting their brain off, that's not going to happen because you'll hear every single noise, and that's where I am. I listen to peaceful music. If you do that regularly, and when a thought comes into your brain, you simply just count to yourself, one, two, one, two. You listen to your breath in and out. And you have to do this religiously. There will come a point where your angel or past life experiences will trickle into you. we all have an angel, we all have a spirit guide, then we have other guides. Our main spirit guide has never been human. The other guides we have, they might be like our past relatives. For instance, my sister in our family died when she was 40, and she is now the person that passes over all of our relatives when we die. So without you shutting your brain off, without your phone, your TV, your computer, all of those things, how can they possibly reach you? Little children are reached because they're still pure and innocent. We're bombarded with media. We're not quiet. We don't take the time to quiet our brain. If we would just simply do that, you will not only reap the benefits, there's so many medical and health benefits. Dave, tell him some of the benefits.
So this is an interesting thing with meditation. So, of course, we did a lot of research because this experience happened to us. I'm going to tell you part of the story is the year after we started to meditate. Some is about being your best self, some of those lessons we learned about our past lives and all those things. So certainly I started to exercise. However, I had tried to diet and exercise my entire life. The first year after I started meditating, I set a goal that I'd lose 2 pounds a week. And a year later, I was 104 pounds less. Wow. Now, we found out meditation actually lowers cortisol, which is that stress hormone that causes weight to stay on. And certainly when we started to meditate, I was having stress and it helped me. We also found that meditation lowers blood sugar, lowers blood pressure, increases dopamine and serotonin, which helps in depression. It has physiological changes. It actually increases the brain white matter in your brain, and it actually shrinks the amygdala, which responds to stress. So meditation has physical things that change you. As it changes you and you become more aware, as you examine the things you believe, and if you start to listen to the voice inside you, sooner or later you'll discover that the voice inside you is not always you. And sometimes that voice inside you is your spirit guide. And as you connect to the spirit guide, it will connect even more. And as you start to listen and then respond, then it becomes a conversation. And it is something that exists. And it is a direct connection to God. It's that direct connection to love. And the spirit guide only speaks in a way that I can't tell you, except that it is a way that you believe is truth. So you don't start to think that you're talking to yourself, because this spirit guide has more wisdom than you. And it will help you. Now, they also will come to you, and sometimes they may ask you, because they really don't have a sex, they will ask you if you'd rather have a spirit guide that is male or female in name. Isabella told me Isabella, but she says she could have been Isaiah. It's an experience that you'll have. If you're very interested, we can look for yours.
You can ask while you're meditating, and okay. And you may get a name. And all of a sudden, I will see things. It's the strangest thing. I'll see a white background with navy blue letters. And people receive gifts, and information different. Everybody does it differently, but you will never feel as good as when you're meditating religiously, and not just because you want to receive something, but because you want to be able to close or open your mind and be able to be reached and open and feel better about everything in life. All of those, there's so many things we worry about in life. There's no reason for it. We are infinite. It doesn't matter what happens to us here ultimately. I mean, we're supposed to do our best and be our best. But it doesn't matter, because if you don't get it right, you are coming back, and it's not our choice. It's our gift to come back so that we can become compassionate and learn love for everybody.
Awesome. I was wanting to ask, because this is going quite back quite a bit, because you talked about your first life being 6,000 years ago.
Yes.
So I was interested, what was life like 6,000 years ago?
Well, I always joke with Dave and say, well, you know, that was a long time ago. And, you know, did we have any conversation or did we go, ugh? We always joke like that. And he says, no, we had a form of language. Dave and I were born in what became the Mount of Olives outside of Israel. Yeah, that was over 6,000 years ago.
It's interesting. We went back because there was actually a settlement there. They found archaeological items there that support that there was a community in that area. So what is it like? So it's hungry, it's hot, it's dusty, it's dirty. There is no, food is very scarce. You fish, you grow your own. We find out that when we're there that we actually migrated into an area called the En Gedi, which was better. It had a good water source. We were able to grow foods and we could fish there because of that. Because that area actually is dry and dusty, and so you literally live on anything you can eat. The life at that time is sort of very hungry. That's all you have time to do. It sounds like, because we had 12 children, and all you have time to do is hunt for food.
Well, we had time to do some other things. Yes.
Hunt for food and procreate. That's about it. Try to stay cool. Try to stay protected. We have the next life, and it's interesting. We found out it was in Thrace, which we had never heard of. Thrace is an area that's at the corner of Bulgaria, Greece, and Turkey. And there was a civilization there, 3500 BC. We were owned by Thracian warlords, which were sort of shepherd people. And we took care of their sheep. We lived in caves along mountains. And it's cold because in the winter there, it does get cold. You light fires in the front of the caves to keep yourself warm. You do a lot of hunting. But that period of time, sheep are more prevalent, so you do have a meat source as sheep and goats in the area. It becomes a little bit more agricultural as time goes. So I don't know, does that answer part of the questions?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's fascinating stories. And you talked a bit about your books. Do you want to give us information on where we could buy your books?
Well, our website is thegiftofpastlives.com. And you can purchase all three of the books there. And I will say that in that we do give great detail in the first book about our past lives. I mean, we had to actually take out, the book is over 300 and some pages, the first one. We had to take out a lot of the details that we had. But when you read the stories, you'll think, these people are either brilliant or these details are phenomenal, and it's because of Dave's gift being able to get them. Because believe me, we're not brilliant. So, no. But we're not the only people that have had this happen. Again, when you get onto these reincarnation sites, there's many people that talk to God and many people that talk to Jesus and spirit guides, all of the above. A lot of them have some weird ideas, but you can purchase our books on our website or the usual places, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
It's on Amazon UK. Other bookstores in the UK also have. You can order online.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, both of you, for taking the time to talk to us and sharing your experience. Like we said at the top of the show, it's a new topic for us, and it's been eye-opening just to hear the experience that you guys have had.
So I'll leave you with one little message that I like to do, which is, of course, for us, reincarnation is very real. So remember this, as we're not taking care of this planet, and we need to, because not only are we need to take care of it for our children, we may need to take care of it for ourselves, because we're coming back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very I hope true. I'm not.
Yeah, thanks very much, Snowflake. We'll see you again in this life or the next.
That's right.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We hope so.
It was a pleasure meeting you guys.
Definite pleasure from our side as well. And I'll download I will actually log on to the meditation app going forward now to to get some time to do that.
Make
it is difficult though. Like you say, with shutting off everything and the way we all live our lives now, it's quite difficult.
Yes.
But I will give it a go. And I will report back on how I'm doing.
Great. Good. Please do. That's great.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Pleasure talking to you.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.